The Coin Week podcast is brought to you by PCGS. Submit 5 or more coins for grading and be one of the first to receive the new PCGS coin stand, perfect for displaying your favorite PCGS graded coin. Whether your favorite coin is a rare 1799 large cent graded VF30 or 2023 First Strike American Silver Eagle Proof, what better way to admire your PCGS certified coin than proudly displaying it on your desk, bookshelf, or mantle? To get yours, visit www.pcgs.com and select PCGS Grading Specials. In this episode of the Coin Week podcast, I talk to Brian Bass, a former telemarketer who lets us in on the tricks and high-pressure tactics that the so-called boiler rooms use to sell overpriced coins. In this interview, you'll get a rare insight into the shady side of the rare coin market, and hopefully get a better insight into the shady side of the rare coin market, and learn how to better protect yourself against the techniques that they use to make you feel like you really would be missing out if you don't make that purchase. All this next on the Coin Week podcast. So, hey, Brian, thank you for joining me on the Coin Week podcast.
Oh, well, thanks for having me.
I was really excited to set this up. You present to us an interesting opportunity, especially for the listeners to get an insight into what it's like to work at a boiler room. We connected through one of the coin dealer groups on Facebook, and you brought up the fact that you had listened to the podcast before. And in a previous episode, I told the story about getting a cold call from one of these boiler rooms where they were pulling out all the stops to try to convince me to buy whatever they had to sell. And every single sweetener to the deal, I had an answer for, whether it was knowing John Mercanti or whatever. And maybe, you know, a regular person might be like BSing this person, but I literally did know everybody that he was bringing up, and it never fazed him. And so in your message to me, you said you think you know who he was. And I was like, I've got to get this guy on the podcast to not only talk about like that, but what it's like to work in a boiler room, how you got into that and how long you lasted, and maybe to just inform collectors how that system works, what they should do to protect themselves, what types of offers are being promoted, how they even get your number in the first place. All this stuff is very, very dark and mysterious. And I think it'd be really great for you to share what you can. And obviously I think on behalf of the Coin Week, readers and viewers, we hope you don't end up at the bottom of the Hudson River after you.
we'll definitely try to avoid that. So to start off, I won't identify by name the company that I worked for. There's no need to. So I'm on Long Island, New York, Suffolk County, and apparently there are quite a few of these, I guess you call it coin mills, located in Suffolk. I don't know why it seems to be a popular area. I was only aware of actually one of them for years, because they actually have a retail store that's quite reputable. And then, you know, I used to work doing administrative work in offices and, you know, a little vest pocket coin dealing on the side. And when the pandemic, and computer programming, and when the pandemic hit, I kind of found myself not in the office and looking for things to do. So the coin thing started to expand, and, you know, people are at home, they're collecting. So online sales started to increase. But early last year, I happened to just stumble across an ad for looking for people to sell coins, on the phone. So I said, all right, let me call. I thought it was like, maybe a regular coin dealer, but it turns out it's a coin mill. So, you know, I talked to the owner, he's a pretty nice guy, he told me what they do there. And I told him, I was honest with him. I told him, pretty experienced. I do a little, dealing on the side. He was at first reticent to even hire somebody with experience, because they generally say they want people that they can mold them. into what they want to be. They're more interested in the sales pitch than any knowledge on coins, because they have a script they want you to stick to do the hard push. You know, lonely grandpa at home, you know, needs to, you know, have whatever coin of the week they're pushing him. So, you know, I told him, and you know, then he had initial concerns along with his wife, who that they've had problems in the past where people come in and try to steal their customers, their information. So, you know, I reassured him, and then he told me their security procedures. They don't even allow pencil and paper in there to write anything down. So you can't like walk out with customer lists. Everything is all computerized Google systems. When they call, they have a script they want you to follow, and they want you to, when you start, they want you to open people with the coin that they're pushing. And their gateway coin is the $2.5 gold piece, the Indian, right? And you know, the place that I happen to, you know, start working for, I have to say, they are reputable in the fact that they actually do deliver. This is the one of the few places that does deliver the coin that you are paying for. We were selling, you know, BU raw, $2.5 Indians, and they do actually deliver, and they are BU coins. The only thing is, you know, you're paying a lot more for them than if you walked into a regular, you know, brick and mortar, or even online through you know, various reputable places. They were reputable. In fact, a lot of the coin mills on Long Island, you think you're buying a BU Indian, for instance, and they'll send you an XF, you know, or they'll send you nothing and just steal your credit card information. So I'm saying this company was actually delivering on what they were selling. The price was too high, in my opinion, obviously. You know, that's how, you know, for instance, a BU Indian, you know, common date, whatever, you know, 19, you know, 14D, whatever, 1915, 1925, you know, they would be selling it for $825. Now, you and I know that you can, you know, you could retail that in a store for probably 650, or, you know, from Atmex for, you know, 615 or whatever, you know. So, you know, this is they would their only thing was, you know, they're obviously, you know, they're doing the hard push, they're catching people who are susceptible, and you know. And you know, they make the sales, but you know, they were reputable in the fact that they actually delivered, and they weren't stealing credit card information. So,
So companies like this, how do they get your name in the first place?
well, that's they keep that's their dark secrets. They don't ever tell where they get their lists from, but from what I surmised in conversations, is they buy their list from companies that specialize in obtaining information like that. So what I think is, if you buy stuff from APMEX or JM Bullion or the US Mint or anything like that, you know, I guess they have insider people that leak out information, just like, you know, your email gets, you know, leaked onto the dark web. And these companies specialize in compiling lists of anybody who's ever purchased, you know, coins or anything. Because I mean, when I was on the phone talking to customers, they would often say, "How did you get my number?" And I would just respond, "Well, you know, that's out of my pay grade. But if you've ever, you know, been on Google surfing for, you know, coins and looking things up, you know, bingo, you know, it catches your information. And you know, there are companies that obtain the information and they sell it to us," which is pretty much true. That's you
Well,
know, but
Brian, let me let's do this question again. I don't know if we have any evidence that it's specifically the Mint or APMEX or any company that sells their name.
oh, no, I
Right,
was, yeah.
right. So I'm gonna ask you again. It just instead of naming companies, just say it could be that, you know, they have,
Right,
you know.
right, right.
Okay. So Brian,
Absolutely.
how do they get a consumer's name in the first place?
Well, you know, it was kind of like a dark mystery that, you know, the owners never talked about, but I know that they buy their lists from another company. And it's kind of a mystery how they get their information. And customers used to ask me, "How did you get my name?" And I would just say, you know, well, you know, Google, you know, if you're on Google and you ever surfed, you know, for looking up coins and stuff like that, it has you pegged as somebody interested in coins. So, you know, or if you bought from a major company, you know, maybe their list gets out. That's pretty much it.
Right. So like walk me through the steps. I know you don't have a script in front of you because you weren't allowed to take one with you, but walk me through the script. Like, let's say you're calling me, you're working at this company, and how is this interaction going to unfold typically?
Well, first of all, I was hired as what's called an opener, okay, which is calling people who have never purchased from us, from the company, right? So, but the script is written in such a way that you're calling the guy up and sounding like you're an old time friend calling him back. Like, hey, Charles, how you doing, man? It's been a while since we spoke. This is Brian from, XYZ Coins. How you been?
All
Okay,
right.
and you started off like that,
So like I'm not one of the people that, I mean, do you get a lot of people just like at that moment they just hang up the phone and the call terminates, or do
Oh
people usually engage?
probably 30% just to hang up immediately.
Right. All right.
And
So I'm one of these suckers who's going to stay on the line. Now, obviously, it's a little weirder for me because like, I know a fair amount about coins, and some would argue how much, but I know a fair amount of coins. And so I probably am not going to be your typical elderly person who only has like a slight amount of information. What happens, like how do you convince somebody who doesn't know anything about coins that they should make a purchase from you?
Well, I have to say that my first day there, within 2 hours, I made a sale of $2.50 Indians to a nice lady that knew nothing about coins, but happened to have a communion coming up and needed some presents, and she was thinking about a gold coin or something like that. So I guess it was happenstance, and I told her how beautiful they were, and she wanted to know what they looked like. And at the time, they didn't have like direct texting set up to do that, so I walked her through looking on somebody else's website to look at the picture of the coin. And she says, "Oh, that's beautiful," and she wound up buying two of them for $825 a piece.
So
So.
you make the sale, an individual buys the coin. How many of these sales do you think the typical salesperson makes a day, or what is the expectation on the part of the company? How many sales you convert a day?
Well, it was a pretty high commission because there's a pretty high profit in there. So if you're selling a coin at 825, I would get about $120 commission out of the one coin at 825, because they're only buying it for probably 500 or something like that. So there would be days where I would make zero sales, but then there would be a day where I would have $5,000 in gross sales. My average earnings out of there per week was averaging about $1,400 a week. I think the highest week was about $3,900 in commit and straight commission. So.
So what happens when you get like so you get this this lady in this hypothetical and she buys the two Indians. Did you ever get back in touch with her and get her to buy more coins, or as the opener was her account given to another sales rep?
Correct. That's the way they do it. So once you open. The way they worked in this particular place was that account is yours, you opened it. So what they do is they deliver they send everything with FedEx, and as soon as they know the coins are delivered, they have their office manager who's been there for years, which I believe you've spoken to. He will call them up with excitement and say, hey, Barry, I see you got your coins. Tell me about them. You love them. How do they look? And get them excited, and then try to upsell them to now complete that. Now you have a couple of Indians. Don't you want to complete that collection? There's only X amount in the series. We can help you fill it out if you want to fill it out, or sell them, Morgan silver dollars or anything else they happen to have. And the way they worked is any sales that would be made to that account, even though I didn't make any subsequent sales, I get half the commission that happens on that. So the closer gets half and I get half. So even if I'm not even working that day, that account gets sold, I get a commission because I opened
And what, did you find that they were
once they get somebody in their ecosystem that they're just able to constantly drain them through selling them coins? Or is that a very unusual circumstance where you get somebody who just goes all in and spends hundreds of thousands of dollars?
Usually they, I mean, about half the time we can sell, they could sell them something else. But often it could wind up being a dead end and nothing else, but you know, they had the initial and, you know, but believe me, they'll keep hounding them. They don't take them off the list cause they said no. And they use an automated computer system. So the computer will just like, cause you type in like, why did the phone call end? Did they hang up? Did they say no? And the computer will just randomly dial them back like a week later, 2 weeks later, constantly. It's just incessantly will keep calling. But occasionally you will hit someone who is very knowledgeable on coins and says, listen, I'm not interested in your pitch about these Indians, but I specifically collect $10 liberties from the New Orleans Mint graded PCGS. Can you help me? And I have to say this particular company, you know, was a legit company and the owner is quite knowledgeable in coins. So that customer we would basically call a whale, meaning they, you know, they buy monster coins. So we immediately, you know, shuffle them off to a different section of the computer and we deal with them as a legitimate buyer, you know, and, you know, we try to find, you know, stuff for them, you know, absolutely. We've hit some, you know, some big time collectors, you know, that do purchase, you know, so.
So it seems to me that like this type of company, and again, we're not going to name them, but this type of company sort of does, that has a legitimate, and I use the word legitimate in the sense that what you would just expect a experienced collector would expect is a legitimate coin retail business. But then they also have this very pushy cold call marketing business at the same time, right? Correct. So it seems like, are they protective of like their, let's just call them their regular front door customers who come to them looking to be serviced? Do they not put them in that pressure ecosystem, or is it one of those situations where once you buy that first coin and they think that they can continue to sell you, that you just get put through the whole system regardless of how you came to the business?
Well, this place did not have a retail, a brick and mortar place. It was an office, you know, in a private area, no retail walk-in traffic whatsoever. But you know, if they gained you, you know, if they got you to buy something from a cold call, they will keep, you know, they will keep calling, you know, and unless you say, don't call me anymore, because by law, you know, in New York State, once you say that, you know, they have to take you off the list. And they did do that. You know, they did follow, I have to say, this place did follow the law. And they were affiliated with all the major, they are members of ANA, PNG, PCGS, NGC, everything. You know, they are a legitimate place, which, and I believe they're one of seven or eight coin mills in Suffolk County that I'm aware of. But the other ones, most of the ones that I'm aware of, they are so shady. It's spooky because I would get customers on the phone and, you know, I would say, hey, you know, hey, Gary, how you doing? It's Brian from, you know, from such and such. Then he goes, oh, you sold me that coin, you know, last month and I never got it. So they would confuse us with the place that they were dealing with that stole their credit card and everything like that. So I got to know some of these other companies. And the owner of the place that I was working for, he told me, he said, listen, if you ever get a guy like that on the phone, don't ever badmouth the company that he got ripped off from, because some of those companies have connections to people that you don't want to deal with, if you understand what I'm saying.
So, well, I mean, that's frightening. Yes. On the thing you discussed earlier, you said that, you know, this company, and we're, you know, for lack of a better word, we're calling it a reputable company and is affiliated with, you know, all of these, you know, these organizations, including the ANA and PNG you mentioned. Yeah. Is it your opinion that, you know, these associations, these professional associations and collector associations are aware of like this type of behavior and more or less find it within the bounds of acceptable business relations? Or do you think they turn a blind eye to it? Do you think they're unaware of just what's going on?
Well, speaking for the company that I was working for, I saw them following the law on everything. They were very careful to follow the law. And the only thing I would say is the coins that they're trying to sell you, they're nice coins. They're just overpriced, in my opinion. You're selling them like super high retail, and they were always able to point to look up the coin value in such and such app, the CoinFacts app. And I could point to, well, the value for this particular date is whatever, $950. And I'm selling it to you for only $825. But again, it's a raw coin. And if you look at recent comps, you'll see that the coin sells for 700, not 800. But they could always point to the value and say, look, we're selling it below the value. So I think everything they were doing is 100% legal. It's just they're misleading you into thinking you're getting a great value when in fact you are paying more for the coin.
So then
That's
that more or less speaks to the general opaqueness of this industry as a whole, because you're right. I mean, you can have a published price guide, and it's only as good as the data that's going in it, how
right.
meticulous the curation is. And it's not just one price guide or another. I mean, it's any price guide. Essentially, it's an opinion. If you have three recent auctions and a coin sells for much less than that, that could be even a bad auction, right? Return. So it's not, it's very difficult, in other words, to really pinpoint a price that a knowledgeable seller and a knowledgeable buyer will agree to for a coin. And most of the coins I'm imagining here, just thinking it through, most of the coins I think you'd be selling over a telephone would be coins that are more or less readily available to your company. So you're not selling rarities that there's four or five known and half of them have problems. These are going to be like modern bullion issues. They're going to be type gold coins, type Morgan dollars. I'd imagine if I was running that kind of operation, I'd really want to sell type gold or novelty insert label modern coins, because it seems like there's a good markup there.
Yes, their gateway coin was the $2.5 gold Indian. But after they got you in with that, they would say, hey, we have the $5 Indians and we have the $10 Indians and the $20, St. Gordons and the Liberties. And they would just keep going. And again, they did deliver on the coins and they were beautiful coins, but the prices were just, and caveat emptor, if the consumer is not doing their due diligence, you're going to pay whatever we're charging.
So what was the like behind the scenes, like, and I'm not talking necessarily about the owners or whatever, but what was sort of the attitude or of the salespeople? I mean, did they relish, like, did they feel, first of all, did they feel like they were taking advantage of these people? Did they relish getting sales, and did they know they were selling these coins for well over market value? I mean, what goes into the mental state of the people doing this job, and how did you feel about it?
At first, I mean, I was kind of in a situation where I needed to bridge the gap, so I took the job. But within a short amount of time, I started to feel a little guilty that I mean, they're getting nice coins because I wouldn't have stayed there if they were shady. In fact, they because I saw the coins, I saw what was going on. So, but I did feel guilty that they're paying more than they probably should for the nice coins. I only lasted there about was it it was maybe 8 or 9 weeks, I think it was. They let me go. I was thinking of getting out of there anyway, but they let me go because they started to get paranoid because of my knowledge, and they thought that I was going to somehow steal their customer information, because I was doing small stuff on eBay or whatever, and they happened to look and they seen that I just sold I think it was like an MS-70 1986 Eagle, big money coin, on eBay for over a grand with a Mercanti signature. And they said, they started the wife and him started talking, and they said, well, this guy, that may be our customer he's targeting with big money stuff. So, they confronted me, and I offered to say, you know, you can look at my phone and my eBay account and everything. I'll hand it to you and you can see. I don't, you know, I don't have any of your customer information. I just sell on eBay and other platforms. I don't, you know, I don't deal direct with any customers. I don't take credit cards. I'm not a business. At the time, I wasn't incorporated. But you know, they decided to let me go. I'm like, okay, goodbye. And that's it.
Well, what about the other people that work there? I mean, how do
oh,
you?
Yeah. When I first got there, you had the owner, and he works in the back office, you know, and he's calling some of the whales and trying to sell them. And following up on stuff. And the wife is also working there. So there were, when I started there, there were two other employees in the boiler room. Okay. You had the, you know, the office manager, you know, I don't want to give names. And then you had one other worker there. So they introduced me, you know, and they showed me the scripts and what to do. And they told me, really, you know, try not to get off script, even though you're knowledgeable, you know, try to stick to it. But the other guys, it was like in those movies, like, you know, when you're on the phone, you're doing the sell. And when they would get off after a sale, would, you know, they'd be excited that they got over, you know, on the customer, and, you know, and they upsold them from one up to three. And, you know, and they would often to close the deal, they would throw in an MS-69 Silver Eagle, you know, that they get for, you know, whatever, $40, and they would throw it in claiming it's $100 value, you know, and upsell them to 5 gold coins, you know, and they would be, you know, just on that. What was that movie called? It was called Boiler Room, right? That
right.
In fact, they often, at the time, I had not seen that movie because I'm, you know, I wasn't into that. That was like their movie. They referenced it. Oh, you got to watch that movie. You know, that's what we do here. You know, we get them for as much as we can. And neither one of them knew anything about coins. I mean, nothing. You know, they just followed their script and that was it.
I mean, did they ever speak disparagingly about these people that they were taking advantage of after the sale?
Oh, yeah. I mean, after they would make a sale, yeah, they would be like, wow, this guy's an idiot. You know, he thought he knew about the coins and I just talked over him and I wound up selling him three of them instead of one. I told him it was the greatest deal in the world, and, you know, and he bought it. You know, they were, you know, very, very enthusiastic, you know, because it was just about how much money they could make, you know, squeeze out of every sale.
So what happens when they end up getting someone like me? I mean, it seemed like your guy who called me, he seemed completely unfazed by everything I was telling them, and almost like it got to the point where I was like, man, I could like so totally burn you, like by like going and exposing this whole thing. And it seemed to me that there was, you know, no sense of self-reflection whatsoever in the entire span of that phone call.
Exactly. So let me tell you what happened one day. So I'm in there one day, and across the aisle from me is this other guy. In fact, they had just hired him because one guy left it. So they had just hired this other guy. He's there for about a week and he has somebody on the phone and he's, you know, he's hard selling him on the gold, you know, the whole thing. He's on there for like 10 minutes. And sometimes, you know, they would want me to help out because if a question was thrown at him, because he's not a coin guy, he would like raise his hand and I would come over and he could mute his, everything's on the headset, so he could mute it so I could talk without the customer hearing and I could feed him information to say. So he says, oh, I got a guy on the phone, you know, he seems really knowledgeable and he's asking about the mint marks and, you know, 1911D on, you know, on a 2.5 Indian. So I'm trying to help the guy, right? So long story short, he gets off the phone with the guy and he's like, he takes off his headphones. He's like, I need a break. This guy ran me ragged, right? So I said, what's the matter? Oh, he knew everything I said. He had another answer for. He says, but I think I probably should have just tried to sell him Morgan dollars instead of the gold coins. And I said, why? And he said, well, the guy's last name is Morgan. Now, at the time when he told me that, I didn't like jump over to his computer to look. It didn't even occur to me to look for a first name or ask him, hey, was the first name Charles? So I just let it go. I didn't even think anything about it. Now, later on, when I was working the next week, I did see Charles Morgan in the database pop up. And I think my computer actually dialed you, but you didn't answer or you weren't home or something like that. So I said, I wonder if that's the Charles Morgan that this other fellow, call him Bill, was speaking to last week. And that was the end of that. Now I'm listening to your podcast a couple of months ago, and I hear you talking about getting calls from this coin mill. And the language that you were using, you said the guy kept saying this phrase over and over again, and I'll throw in a Mercanti sign. So I said, I know who that is. That's the office manager. He's the upsell guy. Now, sometimes they'll put him on the phone to try to really go after the hard clients, such as yourself. So that's when I said, that is Charles Morgan, because he's now talking about the very, and I knew exactly. I mean, I know the exact guy you were talking to. And it's just so funny.
Yeah, it's one of those cases where you have a lion stalking a hyena. The whole time we were talking, I was like, well, I bet I can keep this guy on the phone a while. And so, you know, I just kept circling around him. But, you know, it is incredible. I mean, he was talking to a governor of the ANA. He was talking to the editor of a major coin publication and actually somebody who knew everybody he knew, because like I know these people. I'm friends with these people. And like I said, I mean, John Mercanti's one of the sweetest guys I know. I mean, he signs labels, but what somebody does with that label after he signs it isn't really, you know, something he's involved with. So I just, you know, it just shocked me at a certain point that there really was nothing anybody could say to these people to get them to stop with the sales pitch.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you leave the firm. I wanted to ask you another quick question about it. Like, you're familiar with these late night coin television sales shows, right? And I don't need to name any of them. I mean, there's several of them. I mean, how different, or do you find that what happens in those shows, is that all dissimilar to what happens in these phone call boiler rooms?
Well, yeah, it's a similar type of thing. As they say, you're selling the sizzle, not the steak. Right. So they talk up the coin, like, you know, like the guy on late night TV, you know, he loves to use that word rare. It's rare. It's a rare coin, rare, you know, and he could be talking about an 1884 old Morgan silver dollar. You know, it's not rare. You know, you can find 10 rolls of them tomorrow if you want. But they talk it up like it's the greatest thing in the world. And the price that they have is the best thing going. And if you don't get it now, you know, they're not going to be available tomorrow. It's the same type of mentality. And I'm sure they're nice coins, but again, you know, you buy it from the guy on TV, you're probably paying twice as much for it as it's worth.
Well, I mean, they do have to pay to be on the TV. I mean, it's not like not like NBC says, you know, it'd be great to have on in the 10 o'clock to 2 in the morning slot coin show. And we should give them free airtime. Exactly. I mean, you are paying a lot. I mean, I used to watch these shows. And like I said, we did one a week or so ago, and I wasn't doing it in like in a mean spirited way, but I found like when I was a younger collector or definitely like a little bit less experienced, I was starving for coin content just in general. Like I wanted, like I really like coins, and it's like 12 o'clock to 2 in the morning. There's no coin shops open. I can't, you know, I'm bored, and I see piece dollars or proof sets or whatever, and they're talking about it. And to me, it's like, they are exciting things to watch. Like if you're just a general collector, right? Like, you know, if you're experienced numismatist, probably, you know, boring, but if you're just a general collector and you're like, oh, I want to see Eisenhower dollar blue packs, and I want to see proof sets from the 60s. And you see it, and the idea that you could immediately have them, you just call the number and they're yours and you don't have to go find them in a store. And so like, I always found that entertaining. And I think it's like there's an entertainment value that I think is legitimate, and there, you know, and sometimes the deals are okay. I mean, I'm not saying that they're ever great, but sometimes it's just the things that they're selling are preposterous. I find that because they have to sell so many items to cover their overhead, they're never going to have truly rare things because they're going to need hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them. They're not going to get three cent piece proof coins from 1867 and spend 10 minutes of airtime to make $150 markup. It's just the economics of it aren't real. So they're going to, they're going to do the signature label thing. They're going to do the first strike thing. They're going to do the, they're going to have their own package of something. They're going to colorize the coins or whatever they're going to do to make the thing they're selling look different than what you could find somewhere else. You know, I think there must be a factory in China that makes those cherry wooden cases just for coin dealers who do these shows. Yep. Cause you see them all the time. But I, you know, like I said, on the one hand, I can understand the entertainment value, but if you're somebody who's fairly new to coin collecting, you have to understand this. 30 years ago, there were coin retail shops all across the country, and you could go to any small city, there'd be a store that sold coins. There'd be usually a knowledgeable person working there. Most of the times they were reputable. And because it's really difficult to have a business that runs long term when you're ripping people off face to face. So typically you would be able to have the experience to buy and sell your coins to somebody that you could do business with over a period of time. Like, our industry has changed dramatically. It's a dangerous job to have a brick and mortar shop because you're selling things that are easy to steal, and because they're very portable and they have a high value. So you don't see it as much as you used to. So we have to buy either at coin conventions or online. If you know you're buying a product that's typically sold online, you can use Google, right? You can look things up. You can get yourself familiar with what you're buying. If you're watching a coin show, these segments aren't so quick that you don't have time to verify what they're saying if you're interested in something. You know, and we were doing this in real time in our video. We were saying, okay, they're making a claim about this coin. Let's go see what's going on with it. And like I said, sometimes I said, well, you know, it's an okay price. It's retail, but it's okay. And sometimes I was like, well, that's absolutely preposterous. Don't pay $500 for a coin that selling at Stacks Bowers or Great Collections for $180.
Right.
You know what I mean? But at the same time, people just, I think that they don't have those tools. They're not suspicious. I mean, if somebody tried to call me to sell me something that costs $1,000 that I didn't know who they were, I'd be immediately suspicious, but not everyone's like that. And I do think that with the elderly, I find that sometimes they're just lonely and they want someone to talk to. And so when these people call, they're really high energy. They're really friendly. It seems like they're making them feel like they're special and that they matter. And then, you know, there's probably a sales pitch. I mean, did you guys ever do a sales pitch where you said, you know, this would be a great investment for your grandchildren or anything like that? Did you ever sell the investment angle?
No, as a matter of fact, when they trained me before I started, they said, never use the word investment. Because that's illegal to say that this is an event. They were very careful at that. They said, never say that, because we're not guaranteeing, you know, we're not a fiduciary. We can't tell you what's a good investment. We can just say it's a beautiful coin. This is the value of it, and this is our price. You know, a lot of times we would get the bullion guys. All I want is bullion. What do you got? You got 100-ounce bars? You know, and, you know, we would just move on from them. But yeah, no, they were very careful for that. But there are other unscrupulous places that do, you know, lie to you and tell you, you know, that they're fly-by-night places. They open up, they close up, they change addresses. You know, they, you know, I had one customer tell me, hey, I just sent $17,000 worth of coins to company XYZ on Long Island, you know, close to where you are, and the guy hasn't paid me for them yet. So, you know. They do that too. You know, we want to buy your collection, and you send it in, and that's the end of your collection.
Wow. You know? Well, how does it feel not to be associated with that anymore?
It feels great. In fact, like a week before I left, I ran into a customer, real nice guy, and he wasn't interested in any of the stuff that we were, you know, hawking. But he was collecting Morgan Silver dollars. So he continued his father's collection. He's just putting them into a, you know, Dansko or whatever. And he had some of the monster dates, and he just needed some, you know, I think he needed an 030, and he had the 93S. And, you know, I tried to help him out because, you know, I could look on certain websites, and I could, and then the owner's like, listen, stop trying to satisfy this guy to make $100, dump him, move on. It was a nice guy. I was trying to, fill a couple of spots. He's like, listen, we're not here to make $100 on a coin, talking to the guy for an hour. So, I mean, and then I think it was the next week that they let me go. So, but that was okay, because I was going to get out of there anyway. But,
right. So how's it been for you though, after you left? I mean, are you dealing full time now, or is it kind of a side business for you, or?
No, I'm doing it full time now. I figured, you know what, let me do this the right way. And I am doing it full time. We're on various platforms. And speaking of like the late night coin guys, I buy collections now. So oftentimes, when you buy in a collection, usually it's the heirs to the collection from, the person who unfortunately has passed away. And you often run into, the big cherry wood case full of type coins from the American Collectors Society or whatever it is. And I just had one recently. It's a beautiful case. The coins in there are like AG, G, maybe a couple of VGs, some problem coins, and the receipt is with it. And it says they paid $1,000 for it. I'm very diplomatic. I said, I told her, I said, listen, just want to let I know you got receipts for this stuff here. And, I don't want you to think I'm the bad guy when I tell you what we're going to pay for this stuff. And, most of the time they're like, we understand, he was watching the TV at night. He says they're beautiful coins and he would just buy them without even thinking. I know he overpaid for them. So, most of the time they, the heirs understand. But occasionally, they were like, no, you're trying to rip me off. I'm the bad guy. I'm actually paying you a very fair value for it. And I tell them the case has absolutely zero value to me. Right. The coins have value, but they're all low grade, problematic coins. They're not worth what your loved one paid for.
Yeah, so, I can share that same experience multiple times. I mean, I've appraised collections and, I've seen people who have purchased coins and, they'll be in a situation where, they'll buy multiple copies of the same coin because there's a different novelty insert on the holder. They'll buy the colorized coins or whatever, and you see this stuff and in some respects, it kind of breaks your heart. I mean, I had an elderly gentleman who, he was living in squalor in a house in Florida that he didn't have the physical ability to keep up. His daughter, who inherited his collection, said he was living off of $55,000 a year and a pension or whatever and Social Security combined, but he couldn't afford to really feed himself anything but canned meat and crackers. And he lived and he was, his house was covered with bugs and everything. And he spent almost every dollar he had spare buying coins off of television shows. And so when I was looking at the collection, he had done this for about 5 or 6 years before he passed away. And I didn't see like $250,000 worth of purchases. What I saw after it was all said and done was maybe $50,000 or $60,000 worth of material. And that was like being very, very liberal in some of the estimates I gave them. And that kind of infuriated me because I felt like what this guy really needed. I mean, it was like a twofold problem. I mean, I didn't feel like telling his daughters like, well, if you would have spent more time with your dad, perhaps like he would have felt like that emptiness in him, a little bit. Or it could have been he was just completely addicted to this. But she, he left notes that he was buying this for his grandkids for their college savings or whatever. I mean, he would have, he basically lit $250,000 on fire as far as I was concerned. On the other hand, I've had some collections come in from people who are completely unknowledgeable that turned out to be like, $500,000 worth of rare coins and banknotes and gold and whatever. It's just, you never know what kind of collection is going to walk in the door. And I think that's part of the fun of being a coin dealer. I'm not one, but I can imagine when you see collections every day, it's like a it's like either a tale of sadness or just something really exciting, and you never know.
Yeah, I just took in a collection from, again, somebody who passed away, and this gentleman apparently bought mint sets every year from the U.S. Mint, multiples, like 15 or 20 every year. I don't know why. I guess, do they think it's an investment? The mint sets are overpriced when the mint sells them right off the bat. So, you know, and what's gray sheet on a 1983 mint set? $3. I mean, you know, they were sold for $7. Dealer gray sheet is $3. You know, you're lucky if you can get $6 or $7 for it retail. That's about it. But he had, I mean, boxes full of mint sets, proof set, clad proof sets, like, I mean, boxes of, you know, so that's a loss right there.
Well, I appreciate you coming on. This has been very interesting conversation. I hope, the reason we wanted to have this chat is, you know, there's a behind the scenes of like different aspects of how coins are sold that, you know, the layman may not be familiar with. And, you know, there's techniques that are used, you know, there's psychology that's used. And again, there's also this debate, like it's not necessarily what is legal or what is illegal, what is scrupulous and what is unscrupulous. It's really like, what is a fair price? What is the way this hobby should be, should this hobby be regulated? Should this industry be regulated? What do collectors expect? It's greed sometimes on the part of the seller, but it's also greed on the part of the buyer. You know, it's this, our impulse to like get a good deal blinds us to the possibility that we're not. And that's how I think a lot of people get taken advantage of. They're looking for shortcuts.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, another aspect of it was, I live in an area where they're, you know, within 20 miles, there's a couple of coin dealers, but a lot of people, you know, they might be in the middle of Texas, 500 miles from a coin dealer, so they buy a lot of stuff online. And if you happen to reach out to them, you know, they catch your advertisement, they buy it, you know, without proper research, they could wind up overpaying from anybody.
My last question, do you feel like there's anything that should be done or could be done to kind of stem this kind of this marketing? Or do you think it's just part and parcel of, you know, how people do business? There's no real fix to this.
The companies that are like fly by night and stealing information, obviously they're already violating, you know, laws by, you know, using credit cards without authorization and stuff like that. But the companies that are, you know, that are painting between the lines, if they're just selling something on the high end of retail, you know, caveat emptor. I mean, you know, if you're just going to answer the phone and buy from a stranger, you know, you're getting what you're paying for, you know. And same thing with the late night commercials. I mean, you know, they're selling it, you're buying it. I mean, you know, those are quote unquote reputable companies. But like you said, you know, they got a special, you know, serial number label, you know, only 1,000, 1 to 1,000. It's rare. You know, it's, you know, people buy it. You know, like you said, at best, they're paying, you know, the high end of retail. And at worst, they're paying, you know, a lot more than the thing's even worth. You know, so I don't see a way to, you know, to regulate. I don't think the answer is more government involvement, because those people will always find a way to take advantage of the people who are not doing their research.
Well, I'll close with this thought. You know, we often say, like in numismatics, you know, there's a tuition that has to be paid. You know, you don't go from being interested in something to being an expert in something without making mistakes. Coin collecting is a great dynamic hobby. There's a lot of great people and camaraderie you can develop. The material is fascinating. It can be incredibly interesting, historically important. If your first interaction with coins is something where you feel you got taken advantage of, Wasn't exactly what you thought it was. That's part of the tuition. You've learned an important lesson. There are other ways to buy coins, to learn about coins. Obviously, you can use CoinWeek as a reference point, a jumping off point. There are other great publications, clubs, organizations, and collectors and dealers to become familiar with. But the key to the whole picture is you are responsible and accountable for your own decisions. And so you have to like use your own judgment and not take everybody else's word for something. You know, you really have a role to play in this. And I hope you've learned something from this interaction. You know, we've never had the opportunity to really explain these details this vividly. And for that, I thank you for coming on and sharing it. But the reality is that, you know, it's a great hobby. Don't get disillusioned by it just because, you know, you paid $30 extra for a Silver Eagle than you really needed to, or, you know, the first $2.50 gold coin, which you like, you paid $300 too much for. If you really enjoy these coins and the idea of collecting them, you can do it, and you can do it in a way where you're not being taken advantage of.
Absolutely. You know, a little tuition. And that did happen with a couple of customers. They would say, no, I appreciate the coin, but I am going to fill out the collection, but now I see I can get them, you know, at my local place or whatever like that. So I mean, that did happen. So they paid their tuition, and you know, I paid my tuition. You know, when I started dealing, you know, I'm paying too much for things because all the money that you're going to make on a transaction has got to be when you buy it. And if you're thinking like a collector, you're paying too much. So, you know, I learned very quickly.
Absolutely. Well, good luck, Brian, with your business. And thank you for coming on.
All right. Thank you, Charles.
No problem. Thank you.
Take care.